Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, good morning on this beautiful March day. Almost the end of March.
Almost April on
yes.
Monday.
Yes, can you believe it? Yep, tomorrow Easter, April Fool's Day on Monday, my parents' anniversary. The only day the church was available, April Fool's Day.
I see.
Many, many years ago. So, yeah, this is Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio. We also have Dr. Samira Umat. And let's just dive right in. I'm going to give
let's
you the phone call. Yeah, here is the number to call so you don't wait until the end of the show. We want to get your questions answered and get you in the phone queue. 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. Okay, Dr. Mixon, what's going on in medical news?
All right. Well, this is a fairly new development in medical practice that I find distasteful. Doctors... clinics are getting bought up by hospitals at a furious rate. In fact, almost 80% of doctors in urban areas now work in clinics that are owned by hospitals. And it was an interesting development 30, 40 years ago, I guess nearly 50 years ago when I was a young doc just getting started. But we always wondered where that was going to go. 20 years ago, it was about half the doctors in urban areas, and now it's up to about 80% work for a clinic that is owned by a hospital. Here's the problem. Medicare and insurance companies will pay a hospital about twice as much as they'll pay a private doctor for the same test.
Hmm.
And that's because they figure, well, the hospitals have higher overhead, and so they need higher income. Well, that made sense when the test was done in the hospital because you got a facility designed for really, really sick people, and it's a high overhead facility. But what's happened now is they're buying up doctors' clinics and small practices. The insurance companies and Medicare still pay those clinics as though they were in the hospital.
Mm.
So let me give a concrete example. Let's say that you need an EKG, and your EKG is done by your family doctor or your local internist, and let's say the fee is $150.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that pays for the doctor, his staff, his insurance, the building, the utilities, the computers, everything is covered in that $150, and the doctor takes home what's left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But now the hospital comes in and they buy the doctor's practice from him. Now, he is no longer responsible for setting the fees and hiring and firing the staff and doing all the management stuff. So his life got a lot simpler.
Right, which is why
he did it. And he got bought out.
Yeah.
So they paid him for his practice. But now, if you go back to that same doctor in the same building and get the same EKG from the same machine with the same support staff, it costs $300.
Hmm.
Because the hospital is saying this is a hospital facility, no longer a private practice, and so the insurance companies and Medicare will pay twice as much.
But the doctor doesn't make twice as much.
The doctor gets the same fee.
Yeah.
Okay, so he gets paid just like he was in his private practice now.
Right.
But the charges have doubled.
The charges have increased.
Yeah. Now, in the last few years, there's a new development, and this is what came to my attention this past week that really kind of ticked me off. Now the hospitals are not only charging twice as much for the doctor's services, but they're adding a facility fee that basically doubles the already doubled fee that they're charging.
Wow.
So you go in, you get your EKG. Instead of being $150, which it would be if the doctor owned his own clinic, the EKG is now $300.
Yeah.
And then there's a $300 facility fee that comes as a separate bill. So now you've gone from $150 to $600.
Wow.
For the same test in the same building by the same doctor with the same staff.
So do you get charged a facility fee every time you go see the doctor?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And so...
Stay healthy, everybody. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I know what to tell them. And that is, I guess, a couple of questions. When you're thinking about going to a clinic, when you're thinking about picking a doctor, you should be asking a couple of questions. Number one is, do you charge a facility fee?
Yeah. But the insurance would pay for it, right, Jerry?
Usually, but remember, you still pay 20% copay out of the total bill.
You do.
So that $600 test, you're paying 20% of it. That is now $120, which is almost the full price without insurance of having the doctor do the test by himself.
Which
is crazy.
It is crazy. No, I agree with you. But sometimes, unfortunately, patients don't have a choice.
Sometimes. But if you have a choice... And when you're picking your physicians, your best bet is pick a doctor who owns his own practice or belongs to a group that own their own practice. I mean, it can be, you know, 20 doctors that have gotten together and said, hey, let's share overhead and, you know, and cut our costs.
Yeah.
But if it's owned by a hospital, you're going to pay more. So you need to ask, is this a hospital-owned facility? And do you charge a facility fee?
Yeah.
And your best bet is to go to a doctor who is a private practitioner who owns their own practice, and that way you don't get stuck with a facility fee, and the primary charge will be half as much. So for those of you concerned about the cost of medical care, that's the way to go.
All right.
Lots of food for thought.
Yes, lots to think about. And I thought the resort fees at hotels were bad.
I know.
It's like, what?
You pick a hotel, and the pictures show you this nice pool and a lounge area, and they say we have a spa.
Free parking.
And so, you know, you go and you check in. It's already umpteen $100.
Yes.
And now they throw another $45 resort fee in on top of it.
Oh.
And $50 a day to park your car.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, maybe that's where they learned it.
I guess so.
Hospitals probably learned from hotels.
Yeah. If they called it a resort fee, though, that might be at least funner to have a water slide in the parking lot.
Well, we have physical therapy and occupational therapy and radiology and a cafeteria.
Yeah.
I still don't count that as a resort.
Not as a resort. Okay. Thank you for that, Dr. Mixon. And before we take our first break here in just a few minutes, let me give you that number to call to get in the queue with your questions for Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. The number is 206-421-5757 to be on our show today. That's 206-421-5757. Now, Dr. Umat, why don't you tell us about something special that Longevity has coming up for our hearts in May.
We're so special.
Yes. Well, it is. I love it when we focus on different things during certain months. And this time it's
Dr. Mixon is here, so why isn't
it?
Heart Health at Longevity is on May 9th. It will be a fair where we are actually opening our doors to anybody and everybody who's interested in knowing more about their heart health. This is a blood test. It is a $300 test, and it looks at not just your lipid profile, your cholesterol levels and triglycerides and so on and so forth, but it tells us about the inflammation in the lining of the blood vessel, the risk for that plaque to rupture, the fractionation of the LDL and HDL particles, whether they're big or small, because as you all know, they're all not equal. The larger LDL molecules are safer than the smaller ones. And if you have more of the smaller ones, you are at more risk than somebody who has the same number but large, fluffy LDL particles. And then it tells us about apolipoprotein, which are carrier molecules, and talk about liver congestion. And then finally, lipoprotein particle A, which is a genetic marker, which tells us whether this problem runs in your family or not.
And I'm afraid, my favorite lady doctor, you've just glazed over the eyes of two-thirds of our listening audience because they have no idea what most of those things mean.
You know, they need to come to the office. That's all I can tell them. Yeah. And don't forget to tell them about the Omega check as you simplify what I just said.
Okay. Okay.
So let me run back over that and see if I can simplify it a bit. And then I'm going to tell you about my daughter dumbing down her essay.
Oh. You've got 90 seconds, Dr. Mixon.
Oh, should we go to a break first then and come back and
do
this?
Well, let's have him tell us about the heart health and then talk about Ivory when we get back.
Okay. Your doctor normally runs a cholesterol check, and he looks at LDL, HDL, and the ratio. And, you know, if your cholesterol is in a decent area, he says it's okay. What she's doing is breaking down your cholesterol into multiple subfractions. She breaks your LDL down into three different subfractions, some of which are more worrisome than others, and tells you what kinds of LDL you have. Is it dangerous or not? Mm-hmm. It looks at your HDL to say, is it protective or not? It looks at all sorts of factors. She's even measuring inflammatory markers being produced by the plaque in your arteries. This plaque is what ruptures to give you your heart attack or your stroke. And as that plaque gets worse and starts to become more inflamed and getting closer to rupturing, it starts kicking out different chemicals. And she's actually measuring the different chemicals being produced by the plaque in your arteries and can tell you how close you are to actually having one of them rupture and either kill part of your brain or your heart. Mm. So this is a test that is far more precise than what your doctors are normally doing. Now, your doctors could do this test, but they don't because it costs extra. Okay. So it is about $300, but it will give you enormous amounts of information about your risk of having heart attacks, strokes, peripheral vascular embarrassment, kidney problems. This is a far more precise test to warn you about what may be coming down the pike so you can fix it before the bad stuff happens.
Yeah.
That's what we're after.
And it's also going to check the omega levels. And if you become a longevity patient after doing this test, then this test will be discounted to nothing.
Yeah, we take that $300 you paid for your test, and we apply it towards your fees at Longevity, which basically pays for most of your first month with us.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Okay, again, the date for heart health at Longevity is May 9th from 9 to 4 at all three of our clinics. So you need to call and make an appointment. We'll give you that number in just a few minutes. And, of course, at the end of the show. We don't want you to miss out on that. And if you'd like to get through with your phone calls for the doctors, call right now, 206-421-5757. We'll be back with Bobby in just a moment. After we hear about this could be our new theme song.
Yes.
Yes. Whoa, staying alive. We want you not just alive, but stronger and faster,
leaner, smarter, sexier, happier.
And sexier. Oh, did you get
way,
that? Oh, we did.
Hornier. Yeah.
By the way, yeah, I told them yesterday in our marketing meeting to put that at the end of Project Thunder. I was suggesting they create a final page for Project Thunder, which has a nice summary and a few you know, phrases that we live by, you know, be better tomorrow, and faster, leaner, smarter, stronger, and happier. Yeah. So they're going to do that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Well, Very good.
I teased a little bit before that last call, just because I've been dealing with something at home.
Uh-oh.
I've got an 11-year-old daughter who is somewhere in the top 2% of the country's IQ.
Where did she get that?
Probably from her mother. But you know, yeah, the psychologist told us he couldn't tell us exactly where she was because she knew answers to some of the questions, but she only knew the answers in Mandarin instead of English.
Really?
And his Mandarin wasn't good enough to understand her. So
fascinating.
Yeah, she speaks both languages fluently. So anyway, she had an issue earlier this year when she started the sixth grade at 11 years old, and she wrote a paper, and the teacher accused her of using ChatGPT for writing the paper because it was too good. Well, this is an 11-year-old who reads and writes at a college level. She churns through adult novels at a furious rate. And I had to write an email to the teacher and say, no, I watched her do this. This is not ChatGPT. This is her. Well, she took that to heart that she had been accused of cheating. Mm. So she wrote a paper this past weekend on cellular components and their functions. And so she included, you know, the inner and outer cell walls. She did the mitochondria and their lipid bilayer and what chemicals.
This is an 11-year-old, and I'm already going,
what? She's talking about the Golgi apparatus and the endothelial reticulum and so on. And she's going into great detail. I mean, this kid wrote a paper on things that I did not learn about until medical school.
Wow.
You know, she turns 12 next month. And I didn't mind that part. I mean, I'm proud of her that she's studies and knows
and
stuff.
And understands, yes.
And can put it down in a cogent, effective way on paper.
Right.
But she was then continuing to write on it. And I said, honey, you've already got that paper. What are you writing on now? And she said, well, I have to dumb it down so they won't think it's ChatGPT. And so she dumbed it down to what she thought would pass, and she ran it through a ChatGPT detector. They actually have programs now that find papers with ChatGPT.
Oh, teachers probably use this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so this one still said 70% ChatGPT. Oh. So she said, I got to dumb it down some more. So she spent hours again trying to dumb it down. And I'm just getting so pissed off that my daughter, instead of being praised for being precocious and being able to write college-level papers in the sixth grade, is wasting her time trying to dumb it down for her teachers.
Yeah, something's not right here.
Something's just wrong with this.
Yeah. I mean, the vast majority of the kids her age are probably not able to do that.
No, they aren't.
There are, but there are the odd few that really excel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're unable to allow them to excel. Somehow we should encourage this.
Yeah.
And we are unable to do that. And that's really distressing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry if the teacher can't keep up with my 11-year-old. But, you know.
There's
no reason to make her waste her time dumbing it down for you.
Yes. So, oh, boy. Anyway. Ivory, you just keep doing what you do best.
That's right. And that's what I've told her.
Yes, said, that's good.
I said, I'm hesitant to send her to an Ivy League school. I don't want her at a place like Yale, you know, where they want to make them all woke little social activists and so on. I want my daughter to go to a place where she can fully be all she can be, you know, where she'll be stretched and challenged and gets the joy of learning new stuff, and where she gets to argue with her teachers, you know, where she argues with conventional authority and says, well, yeah, I know the text says this, but and she
what
has
about
good information to, you know, to counterbalance the conventional wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Question, you know, authority. It's okay.
Well, there is no room in science for consensus. Mm-hmm. Every time I see somebody talk about the scientific consensus, I'm reminded that, you know, for for hundreds of years, the scientific consensus was that the sun revolved around the earth.
Yeah.
You know, that the earth was the center of the universe because we had been created to be special. You know, the scientific consensus for ulcer disease, peptic ulcer disease, was that it was caused by stress and anxiety and type A personalities. And now we know it's an infectious disease from a bacterium, for goodness sakes.
Oh boy. You
know, scientific consensus is wrong a lot. And there should be no room for those appeals to authority. The data either shows it or it doesn't. Mm. Yeah. And yes, I bumped up against folks several times in my professional career because I go with the data rather than with what is usually thought.
Mm.
But damn it, my patients then get the advantages to be treated with stuff that other people won't do for another 25 years.
Yeah, that's
years.
Right.
Never.
That's why we call it leading edge medicine.
so, yeah. All anyway.
Right. Aw, well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's a good story. I like that. Oh, you ready for a phone call?
Let's do a phone call.
All right. Let's head to Redmond.
Just thinking of what's ahead of you is a preteen years.
And I like, love it.
I'm so glad I'm done. But, you know, in many ways, it's an inspiring time, too, because
yes.
you have to keep up with your kids, and they bring so much information home, so much enthusiasm and excitement. And our goal as parents and shepherds is to be able to encourage
that and keep it going.
And I love that phrase for a parent is we are their shepherd.
Yeah.
You know, we are there to protect them from the wolves in the world, you know, and to encourage them to be strong and happy and healthy.
And smarter and faster and – oh, wait.
Stronger, faster.
That's for dad, not for her.
I want her stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, and happier. We're leaving out the sexy with my daughter.
Okay.
Thank
you
very much.
She's only 11, so that's just fine. All right. We have Bobby on the line with a question for the doctors.
Pediatric longevity on the way.
Good morning, Bobby. How can we help you?
Hello, Bobby.
Hi, I've been a patient since the mid or late 90s with the clinic. But
wow, wonderful.
I'm getting ready to go through a prostate biopsy.
Uh-huh.
And they call it the Calypso something or other, and I saw a video of it. And it looks like they gain entrance to the prostate through the colon.
Yep.
And is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it explains why they say you'll have blood in your stools, probably, and certainly blood in your. So that would that eliminate the possibility of having to have a catheter at some point in time after that?
No.
Bummer.
Let me explain this. The prostate gland is around the absolute base of the urethra. The tube that carries the urine from the bladder goes out of the bladder into the penis and then goes through the prostate into the penis and then runs down and comes out the tip of your penis. And that prostate surrounds that urethra. You've got three lobes of the prostate. And so the urethra is often getting squished by the prostate as it gets bigger with age. And that's part of why we call this prostatic enlargement or prostatic hypertrophy. And that's the most common reason to do a procedure on the prostate. The second most common thing, though, is rising PSA. And that worries us because PSA rises when anything causes increased metabolic rate in the prostate. So just enlarged prostate, infected prostates or prostate cancers can all cause PSA to be rising. And so if they do an MRI, they're looking at that prostate, trying to see if they see anything bad in there. Hopefully, before they biopsy you, they've done an MRI, because I recommend an MRI before every prostate biopsy.
Okay. They won't do an MRI because I have a defibrillator implanted in my chest.
Oh, okay.
But I used to get CT scans when I got my cystoscopies, and my new doctor has done my cystoscopy in November of last year, and he said he's not so concerned about cancer of my bladder, But I'm going to get have a lab review on the 9th of April. The biopsy is scheduled for the 24th. Okay. If my prostate, it has gone up from a 4.4 to a 4.6, and that concerns him, so he wants to make sure that there's no cancer. And I guess they're going to do about 12 different
biopsies. Okay.
But he wants to make sure there's no cancer there. But I'm going to have that lab review, and if my prostate has PSA has declined at all, we may cancel that.
Yeah, yeah. Because if it's gone from 4.4 to 4.6, that's not much of a rise. That's almost within the margin of error. You've got about a 1 to 1.5 margin of error. If you do a blood test on your PSA, and you run it three times the same day on the same machine, you'll get three slightly different answers. It's not that precise.
Wow.
So, yeah, we'll talk about this more when you come back.
Yeah, stay right there, Bobby. We will talk more about this procedure and prostate issues with Dr. Mixon. And then, Barbara, we'll get to your question, too. Here's that number to get through and get in our call queue. It's 206-421-5757. Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon talking to Bobby about prostate biopsies.
Yeah. So since they can't do the MRI, they're going to do a 12-core biopsy, which is kind of the standard. It's almost random. What they're doing is they use a large core needle. They go through your rectum. They poke 12 separate holes through your bowel down into different areas of the prostate, collect a piece of the prostate and pull it out. It's essentially a blind procedure in that you don't know if you're going to hit blood vessels or nerves or any other stuff in there. And it's not my favorite procedure because there is a discrete risk of bleeding and infection. You're going through the rectum, which is loaded with bugs. They do their best to clean it out, but you cannot realistically sterilize it. You can lower the bacterial load.
Now I'm visualizing bugs, but you mean like bacteria and all sorts
yes.
of things. Okay.
Yeah, bacteria. And you're going through that bowel, you're carrying this stuff down into the sterile tissues of the prostate, and then you're pulling out, a core of tissue. And the idea is that if you poke enough holes in the prostate and sample enough spots, if there's a decent size, large enough cancer there, you got a good chance of hitting it and getting a piece of the cancer. But if it's a small cancer, the odds are you're going to miss it. So you go through the biopsies, and it doesn't guarantee you don't have cancer. It guarantees you didn't happen to get a piece of cancer.
Oh.
So either there's no cancer there or there's a small cancer and you just didn't hit it. Okay. And a certain number of these people are going to have infections and bleeding problems. And I have known a few people through the years that have had serious issues as a consequence of a biopsy that went wrong. Mm-hmm. And, it's not the doctor's fault. He didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just that is a hazard of the procedure. So if you don't really need it, I'd rather you didn't have it. And so what I would like to do is say, look at your PSA. If it's rising rapidly, if it's doubled in a year or less, you've got a really good reason to get a biopsy. But if it has not doubled in a year, if it's only gone up 10, 15, 20%, then I have more reservations, okay? And then what I would be doing is a 4K test. This is, we collect blood and urine, and we look for four separate prostate kinases that give us hints as to whether or not there's a cancer there. And it gives us a statistical probability that there is a cancer. If your 4K test is worrisome, you may want to go ahead with your biopsy. If your 4K test is reassuring, I wouldn't rush into a biopsy.
Okay. Yeah, the other thing he has convinced me of if we don't do that biopsy, he has tucked me into an aquablation of the prostate.
Okay.
And it seems to me that when I saw how that happens, it seems like they remove all of the tissue of the prostate except for the outer shell.
Well, they remove a fair bit, but not all. They don't go out to the edge. So if there was a marginal prostate cancer that's sitting out near that edge, the aquablation can miss it. But they can take out a fair bit of the prostate. And aquablations are usually done with men that have large prostates that are impinging on the urethra, so they're not able to totally empty their bladder. And of the many ways you can remove tissue from the prostate to give room to pee, aquablation is one of the less destructive. It has much fewer side effects than most of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is, if one of these days, and I am 76, so it may happen, if one of these days my prostate gets big enough that I need to have a procedure, right now that is on my short list of choices.
Mm. Okay. The aquablation. Okay.
Yeah.
What would you choose?
Well, I would choose aquablation.
I'd choose aquablation if I needed prostate tissue because I thought there might be a cancer there. Mm, okay. Because the aquablation does retrieve prostate tissue. Mm. But I'm also, if I didn't need that, if I had no signs of cancer, if my PSA was not rising, and if my prostate was just really big, I might go for a prostatic arterial embolization and just have them shut down the blood supply to part of my prostate so that part of the prostate just dies and shrinks and shrivels up and gives me more room to pee. That's not as good. Well, actually, it probably would help if you had a cancer in the area that died, because you'd cut off the blood supply to the cancer too, you know. But you don't get tissue for the pathologist to look at.
Right.
And the aquablation actually gives you prostate tissue that the pathologist can evaluate and look for possible cancer.
Right.
So. Well, I'm thinking about just going ahead and asking him to do the 4K test before we even do the biopsy.
I would.
You know?
I would.
Okay.
It's my prostate. I'm an older guy, and I would do the 4K test, absolutely.
And now Medicare pays for it.
Yeah. So. Mm. And in fact, you know, my PSA has gone up some in the last year.
Okay.
And, you know, not real high, but it's rising a bit. And, of course, I'm 76. We expect it to. My prostate's probably getting bigger as I'm getting older. But, you know, I'll probably spring for a 4K myself here in the next few months just because why not? It's a reasonable thing to do, you know.
Yeah. And then also, Jerry, in the meantime, he can be doing palm juice, resveratrol, optimal prostate, green tea, catechins. There are other things you can be doing to slow the rate of growth.
That's true.
Yeah.
Our optimal prostate has saw palmetto in it, and you can use that a couple of times a day.
Yeah. I'm about 6 months younger than you, Dr. Mixon. My birthday's in January and you're in August, so.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. See, this August I turned 77. Yeah. See, what we're thinking about doing, I was talking to my marketing folks, we're thinking about doing a video of me on my 76th birthday.
Oh, yes.
Running and jumping and doing chin-ups and push-ups and that sort of thing.
Nice. So, that would be fun. Yeah. Yep.
Get to show off my belly.
non-existent belly. Right. Thank you for the call, Bobby.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Talk to you later.
All right. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm going to give you that phone call to get into the phone queue. It's 206-421-5757. We'll take a break right here, and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. And Barbara, we're going to talk to you next. Let's talk about the heart coming up next on Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
And welcome back. We are in the studio again. Yep. Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat, I'm Lynette, and we are here taking your phone calls. We have Barbara Jean on the line from Mercer Island right now. Good morning, Barbara Jean.
Well, good morning to all of you, and happy Easter.
Well, yes, tomorrow.
It's Easter to you, too. You
yeah,
ready?
I'm excited.
Thank you.
I hope you get lots of Easter eggs.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to give you my, I've called before, and I want to let you know, I respect you guys. My mother always said, you can't respect everybody. They must earn it. You people, just, it brings tears to my eyes.
Well.
Aww. Thank you, Barbara.
And I mean, make me get all misty.
I don't mean tears because I'm sad. I mean the kind that come from way down deep from inside the heart.
Aww. Well, thank you, ma'am. We greatly appreciate it. We do our best.
Thank you so much.
Your best is amazing. Okay, here's my story. I listen to you all the time. And I came in to have the gallery test.
Uh-huh.
And then I got the phone review with Dr. Brazel yesterday. In real life, I came in to see Dr. Brazel for my appointment and had the blood draw, and I'm paying for it, the blood draw for the DNA test.
Uh-huh.
And it was decided for me to come back for the results of that in May.
Uh-huh.
Here's my question. Can I come back for the DNA lab review and hook it to the heart test day? Is that possible or impossible?
No. I mean, you could, for the review, you'd need to come in on the 9th because that's the only day we're doing the heart test.
Mm-hmm.
But you could wait and then come back for...
She's a patient. We can do the heart test anytime.
Oh, she's already a patient.
If she's
a patient.
Okay. Yeah, well, if you're one of our patients, you can come back for the heart test anytime. But my impression is because she's breathing kind of heavy and slow, so I think we've either got some cardiac or lung disease here. I hate to make her come too many times. I'd like to.
I have an itchy, scratchy voice.
I see. Okay.
Whether I'm sick or well, it's itchy. Scratchy.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess the day I was born, they didn't fine tune the musical scale of my voice.
All right. Well, if you're one of our regular patients, you can have the heart test any day you want it. In fact, we can just put it into one of your routine blood draws and just add that to it.
Okay, because, see, what's happening to me is I'm coming back the 9th to see Dr. Brazel for the lab review of the DNA test. So on that day, then I could have the heart draw?
Yes, you could do it all the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Perfecto. I'm glad to hear that. And then what is the name of the magic drug that turns back time?
I wish I knew. I think Ponce de Leon and I are both working for that.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. I think you're talking about rapamycin.
Rapamycin.
That's it. May you please spell it.
Rapamycin.
I'm going to repeat it back to make sure. Rapamycin.
Yes, ma'am. That's it.
Well, I want to thank you for everything. Just have a blessed, not just a blessed day today, a blessed life forever.
Aw, Barbara
Jean. Thank
you,
my dear Barbara Jean.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And last but by no means least, happy trails.
Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Barbara Jean.
Bye-bye, dear.
I can just see the smile on her face.
Yep.
Aww.
Well, you know, she reminds me that she wishes that, you know, a happy life. Mm-hmm. I've got the happiest life I know of. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess in many ways I am not a conventional believer. I firmly believe that there is a God who cares about us.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to that deity several times a day as a rule. Mm-hmm. I don't see any bright lights, burning bushes, or voices answering me.
That's okay.
You know, yeah. But I can tell you right now, my conversation is usually not just one-sided, but it's very simple. Because I usually say the very same thing, and that is, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Just thank you.
Attitude of gratitude.
And it's just, well, you know, it doesn't matter. I go out in the morning, and I do my little morning run out on the trail, and I see the raccoon and the rabbits and the birds chasing along, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful, and I'm so happy with it. I just, you know, I just say thank you. Yeah.
I was thanking God for the frogs and the birds this morning.
Yeah.
I love it.
But, you know, if more of us had led a more life more of gratitude and of thinking of all the positives, we would all be much happier.
Yes.
We forget because we are caught up in this social media, I want to be better than the Joneses, or they did this and I didn't get that, or the bad things happen. We forget all the good things in our life.
Yes.
And of course, you know, bad things happen, but that's what makes you enjoy the good.
Yeah.
You have to have the contrast or you get jaded.
Yes. You know? I sometimes feel bad for people that have not gone through something because they don't understand that when they've had it. You know?
And, you know, I don't think I remember the last time I asked for something for myself. If I'm going to ask for something, I'm asking it for the family or a patient or someone I work with. Because they have a need, you know. But for me to ask for anything else, it would strike me as being greed because I've got so much. Mm. I have been given so much in my life, you know, in every aspect of my life that I can't honestly think of anything else I could reasonably ask for.
That's a great way to be. And, you know, sometimes we just have to put on the news these days to realize how fortunate we are.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Perfect. Thank you, Dr. Mixon, for that little pause to remember how important it is to have a heart full of gratitude.
So important. And you know, maybe perfect time, given that this is Easter weekend and people are gathering with friends and family, to just appreciate each other instead of finding the flaws in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I was thinking of that earlier this morning. It was like, oh, this will be the first Easter my mom missed.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, but I have my family and all my kids and all my grandkids together for that. Yeah, what
all the times that you did
blessing.
Have that were blessing.
Every
she's
single
watching
year.
Over you, right?
She had 91, yeah. and yeah. she was thrilled with her 91 yeah. Easters.
Although I'm going to tell a story that's going to probably upset somebody in this in the listening audience, but I'm going to do it anyway. Yes, it's a little Bandine my wife story.
Aww.
We were having dinner with another couple some time back, and the woman made several disparaging, somewhat unkind comments about her husband and some aspects of his character or his performance. And And Bandine, after the second or third disparaging comment, leaned over to this woman and said, "Hey, don't you know you're supposed to worship your husband?" Now, the look she got in return told me that this woman has never heard the words worship and husband in the same sentence in her
oh,
life.
Oh, boy. At least respect him enough to not talk about him at the table with your family and friends. Wow.
So, yes, but I always remember that.
Don't you know
you're supposed to worship your husband? You see why I married Bandine.
There you go, yes.
Yes, Jerry, we know.
We know, there you go.
She's probably the one person on planet Earth that would worship.
Oh, Dr. Mixon. Hey, we have a whole nother hour, and I hope you'll stick through it and stay with us. And if you've got questions, we want you to call 206-421-5757. Oh, yes, we can. We'll be back with Jeanette just after the break. Charlie, we've got you ready to go. And Joel, those are the next few phone calls. We'll be talking about blood vessels, osteoporosis, and neurology in just a moment. Stay right there. You're tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine.